The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 15, A Traitor. Thomas awoke to see the same dark figure looming ominously over him. He jumped up in panic and gasped at the pain in his ribs.
It's okay, Thomas. You're safe now. Easy.
His vision cleared and he realised with relief that the figure was Commander James, who bent over him with a reassuring hand upon his shoulder. Thomas looked around slowly, only to discover that he lay upon one of the treatment beds in the infirmary. Grace sat next to him, an unlit cigarette placed between her lips and a weary look of relief upon her face.
"Hi, Thomas. For a minute we thought Sanders had squashed you," she grinned.
The big man stood behind her with a similar expression. Thomas sat up in a slow, cautious motion, wincing at the pain in his side.
"Mr. Sullivan, it is a great relief to see that you are relatively unscathed," said James with a smile. Thomas felt anything but unscathed.
"Just a few bruised ribs," said the doctors. "You'll be scurrying about again in no time," laughed Grace.
What happened?"
Thomas stuttered at last, sitting up on the edge of the bed.
"We had a visit from the field," said Grace casually, although her eyes betrayed her. "You've got Jonah to thank for stopping you from being barbecued."
You saved my life,"
stammered Thomas, as events started to flood back. Sanders gave a half smile and looked, if anything, a little embarrassed.
"He's not the star prop forward of our camp's rugby team for nothing," said James proudly, patting Sanders on the back, "as I'm sure he will testify."
James nodded idly to the other treatment bed behind Thomas. He looked around and jumped in horror, shrieking in pain as he did so. Next to him lay the huge, nightmarish figure who had assailed them, lifeless but still menacing.
Oh, I'm sorry," said James. "I didn't mean to startle you. I expect you've had a few too many surprises already today. We just didn't have anywhere else to put him for the moment."
Thomas looked over the huge, dark suit, corroded and dust-covered. The round goggles of the face mask still gave off a pale green luminescence.
"Who are they?" he asked fearfully.
"That is what we're hoping to find out," muttered James. "This is an excellent opportunity."
Thomas eyed the figure with suspicion. It seemed that at any moment it would burst back into life and attack him again. He felt nauseous and dizzy.
"I think Thomas could do with a cup of coffee and a rest," said Grace gently.
Sanders came forward and helped him down from the bed. They made their way out to the treatment room and down to Grace's office, where they made him comfortable in her armchair and covered him with a blanket. Thomas had noticed many uniformed military personnel standing guard in the corridors.
"Stay with him," Thomas heard James mutter to Sanders as he left,
and soon Thomas was drifting into an uneasy sleep, filled with dreams of grotesque figures with pale, glowing eyes. Alex stumbled wearily down the ramp of the aircraft and out into the harsh lights of the hangar. An arc of people stood before him, most of whom he did not recognise. They wore unfamiliar dark grey uniforms and were armed with pistols or automatic rifles. They looked severe and cruel. Henschel stood in the middle of the group, staring intently at Alex. His ubiquitous white lab coat was gone, and instead he wore a long dark overcoat with a high collar, which contrasted severely with his pale alabaster skin and a shock of white hair. Alex stopped before him, viewing the old man with curiosity. Peter alighted from the cockpit behind Alex and walked past him without a word, joining the ranks of the guards.
"Well, what is this?"
asked Alex quietly. Henschel didn't reply. He just kept staring at Alex with his penetrating blue eyes. At his side, Peter also stared defiantly. Slowly, Henschel shook his head and gave a long, weary sigh.
"I didn't want to believe it, Alexei. You of all people. How could I believe that they could have got to you? You were a keystone of our cause. It fills me with sorrow."
He hung his head for a moment, closing his eyes in sadness. Alex looked around him in a bemused state. He suddenly felt threatened by the soldiers around him. His head started to ache, a sliver of pain pushing behind his eyes.
"What are you talking about, Dr. Henschel? You're not making any sense," he muttered nervously.
He He took an imperceptible step backwards, his body tensed, ready to fight.
"I have watched you since you first returned, Alexei," explained Henschel gravely. "At first I didn't want to admit you could have been taken, so, though it pained me to do it, I had to test you." "And taken by what? What are you talking about? Have you all gone mad?"
A hint of hysteria crept into his voice, but he calmed himself, trying to relax so that he could move fast if needed.
"You failed to test, Alexei,"
Henschel continued in grim resignation.
"I ordered you to kill the British scientists and wipe out the threat to us all. You sabotaged that mission and may have sealed the fate of the world. Now, with Ekristina's death, you have given them access to our knowledge, a matter to which we dare not consider the consequences. I will pray for your soul, Alexei.
Take him to the cells." He sighed as he spoke in a monotone expression of sorrow. The guards moved cautiously towards Alex, who backed away from them, open-mouthed.
"Wait, what do you mean, the cells? This is nonsense, Peter. You know I didn't sabotage the mission. I just couldn't..."
Peter glowered back at Alex, but remained silent. There was a look of burning hatred in his eyes. The first soldier reached Alex and grabbed his arm roughly. Instinctively, Alex grasped the man's thumb, twisted it round in a fluid movement as he stepped backwards. The man released his grip and his head flew backwards as he cried out in pain. Alex struck him firmly on the chin with the heel of his hand, knocking the man off his feet and sending him sprawling. The other guards took an alarmed step backwards and raised their guns.
"No, don't shoot! Hold your fire!"
yelled Henschel, with a hint of terror in his voice. Alex felt another jolt of pain behind his eyes, and he staggered for a second. There was a strange, expectant impasse, where Alex waited for the nervous guards either to move on him or fire, while Henschel watched the scene with a peculiar mix of curiosity and fear. When nothing happened, Henschel seemed to sigh with relief.
"Take him to the cells," he said again,
and Alex, in a daze, didn't resist as guards nervously approached him and placed a pair of handcuffs around his wrists. They led him off down corridors he had never seen before. He was astonished at the size of the fortress, going deep, deep underground, through rough, dimly lit concrete tunnels, until finally he was led into a small, damp cell. It contained a bed, rudimentary toilet, and a simple table and chair. The guards removed his handcuffs and left him standing in a daze in the middle of the oppressive room. The door closed with a low clang, and he was alone, desperately trying to make some sense of it all.
"So what do you think we should do?"
asked James at last. He sat in a low chair in the treatment room, tiredly rubbing his eyes. Grace looked up, distracted from her thoughts. She had been slowly circling the lifeless figure for some time now, gazing with interest at the workings of the suit.
What should we do? Well, that's obvious," she muttered. "We need to examine this suit in detail, take it apart, analyze the components. I mean, this technology is incredible. Do you see how there's no obvious air tanks of any description? That must mean that there's some sort of filtration system. I guess that would be this part here. Well, that would mean that the air of the field is basically breathable, but there's some harmful agent, a particle or energy or..."
"Grace," cut in James, as she started to get carried away.
"We are currently under investigation. All work here is supposed to have ceased."
"But we can't pass up an opportunity like this. What are we supposed to do? Leave him out with the dustbins? This is physical proof that people are working against us. Perhaps proof that life exists separate from us in the field. Just what can we do?"
Grace's voice was passionate and emotional. She slumped down on the side of the bed next to the lifeless figure, her head in her hands.
"We just can't put him in a fridge and forget about him, Colin," she muttered wearily.
All right, sighed James. "I'll talk to my superiors and try and explain what's going on. They'll probably think I've gone stark raving mad. But I still can't see a way out of the criminal investigation. We can't just brush that aside, Grace. If they find us guilty of causing that plane crash, then it's out of the military's jurisdiction. I just don't know what to think at the moment."
"Well," sighed Grace, lighting her cigarette at last. "We're going to have to do something with this guy soon, or he's going to go off. Talk to your bosses. I'm going to try and calm down any rumours that are probably busy circulating at the moment. It's not every day people appear out of thin air and start shooting."
She got up to leave. "I'll check on Thomas too.
He looked a little shaken up, she said.
Are you sure you're all right yourself, Grace? Asked James quietly.
Grace just shrugged and gave a grin.
Well, just be careful for the time being, he said gently. We don't know if any of these people are going to try anything else.
Now, I want someone with you at all times.
Oh, Colin, I can't have someone at all times, he repeated sternly. It's too dangerous at the moment. There's no way. Well, we can't afford for anything to happen to you, Grace.
James looked away, embarrassed.
No, that's sweet, she smiled. But don't worry about me. Just find out where we go from here.
It's all a bit messed up, really, isn't it? She laughed lightly and walked out of the door.
You could say that, smiled James wearily. You could say that.
Grace opened her eyes groggily and peered about her. She was curled up on the old battered sofa in the conference room, covered with a moth-eaten travel blanket. Next to her head was an empty wine bottle and her shoes. She looked hazily towards the door to locate the cause of the disturbance. Matthews, her bodyguard, was talking to somebody outside and gesturing back into the room. Presently, he walked gingerly over to her.
Morning, Matthews, grumbled Grace. Dr. Palmer. Commander James would like to see you. He'll be in your office, said the big man quietly.
He was tall, bald, and appeared to be constructed out of solid muscle. His nickname was Chunk.
No, right, thanks, said Grace, sweeping back the blanket and sitting up. Oh, hell, my watch, what time is it?
She asked, scratching her head and yawning.
7:15, replied Chunk. What? God, Colin's eager, isn't he?
She said, slipping her shoes on.
Christ, what happened to your eye? She asked, standing up.
Matthews had an ugly cut under his left eye, with a deep purple swelling pushing the lid closed.
It's nothing, he mumbled in embarrassment. Just an accident.
No, all right, be like that, laughed Grace.
You boys playing rough.
She walked out of the conference room towards her office. Commander James was pacing the room when she got there. Before she could speak, he pointed to a newspaper lying on her desk. His face was grave and serious. She looked at him in alarm, then went over to read the headline.
Secret weapons base shoots down passenger plane. Oh my God.
She slumped into her seat, letting the paper fall back to the desk.
Somebody has leaked that, spat Colin, still pacing the room. Somebody on this bloody base.
His voice rose to a rage.
But they can't write this rubbish, muttered Grace, glancing through the article. I've just been informed that Parliament are going to be asking questions in the House about us, said James forlornly.
Grace looked aghast.
It's gone that far, she whispered. Now that the news is out, they can't sit on it any longer, he said. They'll be calling for a full inquiry.
The colour drained from Grace's face.
What are we going to do, Colin?
She asked weakly.
I don't know, he smiled grimly. But I think there will be a lot of interest in the field from now on.
They'll all get the wrong end of the bloody stick, muttered Grace.
We're moving the body, said James suddenly. I don't want anyone to know about it in the labs.
What do you mean, Colin?
Asked Grace in concern, looking up from the paper.
Where are you moving it?
I can't tell you at the moment, Grace. Don't worry.
He held up his hand as Grace began to protest.
I'll explain everything very soon, believe me, but for the time being, I want as few people to know about this as possible. Don't you trust me, Colin?
She asked wearily.
You're one of the few people I do trust, Grace, he said gently. No, there are some things I need to find out, and I don't want that body around with the investigation ongoing. I promise that you will get to analyse every bit of that suit in the near future, don't worry.
Okay, said Grace slowly, looking mistrustfully at James.
You better get going. The day shift starts at 8, then the place will be packed full of curious people. But I'm afraid the body is already the major topic of conversation around here.
I just want it out of the way for the time being, sighed James.
There's someone coming in later today. He may be able to sort things out.
I'll talk afterwards.
You're being very mysterious of late, laughed Grace.
James shrugged and smiled.
I'll see you later, Grace, he whispered, and walked out of the room.
Whoa, what the hell happened to you?
Laughed Jones as a fresh group of guards came to take over from the night shift. Matthews covered his swollen eye with his hand and mumbled something inaudible.
What was that?
Teased Jones.
Go on, tell him,
laughed Mandelson, one of the guards who had been on duty with the big man.
Come on, who's been fighting?
Asked Jones again. That old witch Palmer got pissed again and landed him a beauty, laughed Mandelson.
Are you kidding? Roared Jones. You losing your touch with the ladies?
Oh, he was putting her to bed. I guess that's how he liked them, with a bit of...
Matthews grabbed Mandelson by the throat in a blur of movement, his huge hand going much of the way around the man's neck. He pushed him up against the wall, Mandelson's feet dangling in midair.
Don't you ever talk about Dr. Palmer again. Ever.
He hissed, his enormous features pressed close against the terrified man's face. He slowly released his grip, and Mandelson slid to the floor, coughing and spluttering.
Easy, Chunk. We were just joking,
stuttered Jones nervously.
Well, don't, grunted Matthews, and walked off, leaving the others standing in a stunned silence.
What the bloody hell has been going on here?
Demanded Detective Scott, storming into Grace's office. He stopped for a second upon seeing Commander James and another unfamiliar man seated across the desk from Dr. Palmer. He took a deep breath and continued anyway.
I've just had reports from my men about an incident yesterday. Shots fired and rumours of covers up. This is my investigation here. I should be informed of any...
Good afternoon, Scott, cut in Grace.
Shouldn't that be cover-ups? Anyway, won't you sit down? We were just discussing you.
She gestured to a small office chair in the far corner of the room. The detective turned a darker shade of purple and curtly refused Grace's offer to sit.
I demand to be informed of any incidents at this facility pertaining to my investigation.
I think that's your favourite word, incidents, isn't it? Scoffed Grace, adding fuel to the fire.
If I may interrupt a moment, began James's companion. He was an unassuming, good-natured looking man, in his mid-60s, with unkempt white hair and a jovial smile. His ill-fitting suit served to exaggerate his portliness.
Actually, the incident is unconcerned with your investigations. It need not concern you.
Scott looked as if he would explode with rage.
And just who the hell are you? A criminal act may have been committed.
My name, interjected the old man with a warm smile, is Aubrey Wilson. You may call me Mr. Wilson. I understand this to be a military facility, run under their own jurisdiction. I'm sure they are conducting their own internal investigations. Is that not so, Commander?
Wilson looked across to James with a wink, and the big man smiled back to him and shrugged lightheartedly. Detective Scott looked back and forth between them in disbelief. Grace sat back in her chair, grinning.
I need not remind you, Commander, began Scott icily, that any investigation...
Mr. Scott, interrupted Wilson yet again, rising from his seat and placing a small pair of tortoiseshell glasses upon his nose.
Mr. Scott, may I have a word with you somewhere in private? Do you have an office here? An investigation headquarters, perhaps?
The portly old man took Scott by the arm and led him towards the door.
If you will excuse us, he smiled back to the others. Dr. Palmer, a delight to meet you. Even Dr. James understated the pleasure of your company.
And with that he was gone, taking the confused Detective Scott with him. Grace turned to James with a look of astonishment.
What a delightful man, she beamed.
But upon seeing James's expression of embarrassment added, and just what have you been telling him?
Aubrey and I are old friends, muttered James, turning crimson. He may have taken some of the sting out of Scott's tail, but just be careful, Grace. Aubrey is a problem solver, which means that people high up are starting to see all this as something serious.
Well, muttered Grace, it's about bloody time.
Sir, are you all right, sir? Asked Gutteridge in his clipped, economical tone.
Spears stumbled out of his office, looking pale and shaky.
He grunted, and looked up at the squat, powerful man. His eyes seemed to take a moment to focus. We're in trouble, he croaked hoarsely.
Sir, inquired Gutteridge. He still managed to inflect a tone of absence and distraction into his words. It was as if he were taking in all his surroundings at the same moment,
and this conversation were a mere disturbance in his concentration.
"The software you gave to our operative in Malmesworth," he began. His voice trembled, and Gutteridge marvelled that his superior could get any paler than usual.
"The virus?"
"The virus. I've just received word that its security may have been compromised."
Gutteridge showed no sign of reaction, his face a familiar deadpan.
"I was led to understand, sir, that the virus would be undetectable on any system. They claimed it was uncrackable. The encryption was..."
"Yes," interrupted Spears in a hysterical voice. "Well, they didn't bargain on some stupid covert ops going and handing all the codes over on a damn silver plate."
He paced the room nervously.
"CIA were bugging some computer company in Manchester, England. They screwed up and got caught with the whole lot. The source codes for the virus, all the encryption data, everything."
"But they don't know that the virus is on the systems at Malmesworth?" asked Gutteridge.
"Not yet, but now they know what to look for. If they can find it, then it would lead them straight back to us," said Spears nervously.
"Then we better hope they don't look," muttered Gutteridge.
Spears smiled desperately.
"Step up pressure on our operative in Barnsworth. She needs to increase the supply of data on the array."
"She's already taking a lot of risks, sir," said Gutteridge. "And now we're starting to get some good information via the crash site."
"We don't know how much time she has left there, Carl. If they find the virus, they'll probably figure out who planted it."
"Shall I have her prepare an escape plan, sir?"
"Whatever,"
replied Spears absently.
"But we need that data."
"Okay, make this quick, Colin. I've just spent an hour listening to that bloody detective droning on again,"
cursed Grace, exhaling a cloud of cigarette smoke into the chilly air. Her voice was light-hearted, but her eyes belied the strain she was under. Commander James bustled her into the car and his driver set off across the base. Grace peered out through the windows as they passed rows of grey huts and buildings, all frosted with white ice. The sky was a dull, watery grey, and the whole base seemed to have been drained of colour.
"Where are we going, Colin?"
she sighed again, as the car left the main road and headed off towards the woods on the far sides of the PT fields. James smiled and said nothing.
"I'm facing prison and we're off bloody joyriding," she muttered to herself.
As the road rose up, winding through the bare trees, Grace realised where they were heading. She looked up at James in confusion, but before they could speak, the car slowed to a halt in front of a security post. Armed guards checked their IDs, even Commander James's, she noted, and then the car pulled away, gliding slowly through the overgrown, ornamental gardens of Malmesworth House.
"What are we doing here?"
muttered Grace as she gazed out of the window. The gardens had a ghostly emptiness, wrapped in a light mist and sprinkled with frost. The trees and bushes sparkled with ice and the tyres crunched upon the cold, hard gravel. They pulled up outside the main entrance, and James helped Grace out of the car. It drove off slowly as they closed the doors, disappearing into the mist, leaving them alone in the winter silence.
"This way," said James in a low voice, leading her up the steps with a smile.
The door opened as they approached, and an armed guard silently welcomed them in. Grace, realizing she were getting nowhere in her questioning, let herself take in the old building in quiet wonder. It was the first time she had actually visited the place in all the months she had worked at Malmesworth, although there were many pictures scattered about the labs from the time when the manor had been in use. James led her silently through the entrance hall, past several rooms, all of them shabby but with recent signs of disturbance, and then down a steep flight of stairs. Immediately, the environment took on a different quality. The walls were newly painted, and gone was any sign of dust. They walked down brightly lit corridors, similar in feel to the labs on the base. A security station was set up at the end of the hallway, and once past that, Grace was ushered into a small lift.
"Okay, enough. Just what's going on, Colin?"
demanded Grace as they started to descend.
"This area," he began slowly, as if choosing his words with care. "This area must remain completely secret, Grace. It is highly classified."
Grace shrugged.
"There is a research and production facility down here, closed until recently. But it has been reopened in order to address some issues pertaining to the field," said James.
"I don't understand," sighed Grace, as the small lift continued its descent. "I thought we were on the verge of being shut down."
I think it's in the balance," said James defensively, but the attack last week has been a wake-up call to a lot of people. There are many worried folks who are just beginning to perceive this as a whole new terrorist threat. I was ordered to set this place up as somewhere separate and secret from the labs. We need to be sure of security here. The doors of the lift slid open, and they walked out into a tiled corridor. There was a strong smell of new paint in the air. James led a bemused Grace down several passages, and finally into a large, circular room. A dozen or so figures in medical gowns were gathered around a surgical table in the centre of the floor. "I thought you would want to be in on this," whispered James, handing her a gown from off a trolley nearby. Grace noticed several armed guards stationed in the shadows around the walls. Aubrey Wilson stood a little way off behind the group, looking distinctly out of place amongst the medical staff. He waved jovially to her, then turned and left through another exit. She walked forward to get a better look at the figure on the table, and realised with a gasp it was the suited soldier who had attacked Thomas. You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.